Welcome to the New York Knicks, those championship seasons. I'm Bud Mishkin. In 1987, I was blessed to work on the radio show Sports Night with Dave Sims on WNBC Radio in New York City. I worked with wonderful people, including Dave, now the voice of the Seattle Mariners, Mike Breen, the voice of the NBA Finals, and Gary Bridges. They gave me great opportunities, including the chance to work on A Labor of Love, a radio documentary about the New York Knicks of the late 60s and early 70s. It is a love story between a team and a city, New York, the place where basketball's nickname, the City Game, was born. It's the story of a wonderful collection of players that epitomized team on the court and a compelling collection of men off the court. This is a comprehensive audio look at the team and the time. 9 episodes, totaling more than 3 hours. It's all there, how the team was built, the two championship seasons, 1969-70 and 1972-73, the players, the fans, the influential role of the team's radio play-by-play announcer, Marv Albert, and, eventually, the end of an era. This series also will allow us to hear the voices of those who have passed away since this first aired in 1987, including the writers Phil Berger and Lenny Lewin, the iconic broadcaster Marty Glickman, the memorable Boston Celtics announcer Johnny Most, the great Boston Celtics guard JoJo White, and the player whose trade to the Knicks in 1968 was the final piece of a beautiful basketball puzzle, Dave DeBuscher. I've worked in radio and television news and sports since 1981. This is one of my proudest creations. I produced and wrote the documentary and conducted the interviews, and my friend and former colleague Gary Bridges did a terrific job voicing it for Sports Night on WNBC, a radio station last heard in 1988. This is the first episode, an introduction, and a history lesson about the place still referred to in New York as the Old Garden. Settle in, and I hope you enjoy the first of 9 episodes of the 1987 WNBC radio documentary, The New York Knicks, Those Championship Seasons.
Tonight, a WNBC Sports Night special, The New York Knicks, Those Championship Seasons.
Looking at the clock. Now Barnett fakes, gets off the shot. Barnett hits with 4 seconds to go. 111-108 as West gets it up. Pulled out by New York. There's the ball game. The Knicks win. The Knicks win.
West busts them across, loses the Frazier, dives ahead of the field, down the line, layup is good. Stolen by Frazier. Out of the backcourt, across the midcourt line with Russell on the left, down the lane with the photo, but it's good! Fast break for the Knicks, Russell across the midcourt line, top of the key, cross court by that front 20, he jumps, yes! And the Knicks trail by one, outside Bradley, one-handed from 20, yes! Lakeside stalwart, he sets, now drives on Chamberlain, past the basket, back in, it's good! A spectacular shot by stalwart, intercepted by Frazier with 8 seconds, Frazier to the forecourt, along the left sideline, stops, jumps, yes! With 2 seconds to go, the Knicks lead by 7, Lakers try to come out of the backcourt, they will not be able to. 113-99, the Knicks inbound about it in the backcourt, cross court to Buscher, 5 seconds, the Buscher holds the ball, 3 seconds, the Buscher holds the ball, 2 seconds, the Buscher holds the ball, that is it! The New York Knickerbockers have won the 1969-70 World Championship of Basketball. They are being mobbed as they head to the dressing room. The New York Knicks are the world champions in a devastating rout.
If you're less than 25, it may seem like a fairy tale. If you're over 25, it probably seems like a dream. But in the early 1970s, the New York Knicks were twice the world champions of basketball. The process of building a championship team began about 15 blocks away from the Knicks' current home, in a place many consider the mecca of basketball. The old Madison Square Garden was on 8th Avenue at 49th Street. Now, Marty Glickman all but invented the idea of basketball on the radio, and in the years preceding their first championship, he was the voice of the Knicks.
It was a good deal cozier than the new Madison Square Garden. It was smaller, and the spectator facilities were closer to the court itself. The old garden rose, it seemed, higher than the new garden, and there was a sharper angle to the rows of seats. So you were closer to the court, just as high from the court as you might be today, and my broadcast location was off the front edge of a mezzanine. And the mezzanine was perhaps 30 feet off the level of the floor, and I was 10 feet from the near baseline. I had easily the very best seat in the house.
Part of the charm of the old garden was the booming voice of John Condon.
The old building, it was more like a club than it was a building. In the lobby, you walked into the lobby, everybody was there. You knew everybody as you walked in, and you talked with everybody, and everything seemed to be more homey, if that's the word, I don't know. But the stadium itself, the fans seem to be on top of the action. This building that we're in now is a beautiful building, but it's spread out. And the old garden, the mezzanine, was probably the best seat in the house. And the balcony and whatnot, you were looking right on top of the action. You weren't spread out. You were right there. You seemed to be part of the scene a lot more than in this building.
Marv Albert rose through the ranks with the Knicks, from fan to ball boy, and eventually to announcer for those championship seasons.
The old garden was very special because the fans were very close to the court. It just was a terrific building because of the meeting place in front. You had the marquee. You had Needick's off to the right. People would congregate, talk basketball, wager a little bit, I'm sure. As a kid, I didn't even realize that was going on. You had the all-NBA doubleheaders that were very, very special. You know, think of Boston and Philadelphia in the first game and the Knicks against whoever in the second game. Games that would doubleheader would start 6:30. It would seem would go all night. You had a press box that was seemed like it was right on the court. It was hanging from the mezzanine area. And, of course, John Condon's voice boomed out. Yeah, it was a sound to it, too. The ambiance was just magnificent.
Brother Steve Albert followed in Marv's footsteps as a Knick ball boy in the 60s.
I used to hop on the subway. Usually the games were Tuesday and Saturday. I used to bring my homework with me on Tuesdays and get as much done as possible. Get to the game about 2 hours before the start. Go out to the floor. This was the old garden. And warm up with the players. It was a lot of fun. And got to know a lot of nice people. And, you know, it's one of those experiences you never forget.
Sportscaster Don Gould was a fan in those days.
There were little nooks and crannies in the old garden, little places you can go and hide. Even the men's rooms had a little more what's that, aesthetic value than they do right now. They're cleaner now, but in the old days, there was a lot of graffiti on the walls, and it was fun.
John Andres remembers from his days at Fordham that for the city's college teams, playing in the old garden was always the biggest high.
My fondest memories, believe it or not, were playing in the garden on Saturday mornings for practice. Occasionally the garden, as they still do, lets the local college teams use the garden floor. And I remember going down there for practice, and I would get such a kick out of just walking into this empty arena known as Madison Square Garden and practicing. And it was sort of a homey kind of feeling. And if you could feel homey about the garden, that was just a great, great thrill.
You'd get a sense of the excitement before you ever got a glimpse of the court. New York Post writer Leonard Lewin covered the Knicks from their first days.
The entrance to the garden, which was between 49th and 50th Street, the main entrance, there were stores there. There was a Needick's on one side, and there was an Adam's Hat on the other side. And people used to go in there and collect and talk before they opened the doors. So people like, I think Marty Glickman and those people used to rush in and grab a Frankfurter at the Needick's stand, when they were late and then go in there. And these people would stand around and talk and bet.
Marty Glickman remembers the place to be was under the marquee.
Ex-basketball players would congregate there, and everyone in New York was an ex-basketball player. Everyone who came into the Garden played basketball at one time or another. Schoolyard basketball, playground basketball, high school basketball or college basketball, and even professional basketball, as well as industrial league basketball. So they talked basketball, and they talked betting.
And the Garden's surroundings grew to be part of the lingo of the city's game.
An advertising agency named Weiss & Geller handled the Needix account. And there was the Ballantyne Blast in baseball, and Good as Gold and Old Gold in baseball as well, that Red Barbie used. Mel used the Ballantyne Blast. And Russ Hodge used to say, "It's gone into Chesterfield," Chesterfield cigarettes. And the ad agency asked me to come up with a phrase. And I came up with the simplest phrase, and it caught on almost immediately because it's a phrase that's still used today. When a shot is taken, it's good, like Needix. And it was so popular that public address announcers used to use it. The kids in the schoolyards used to use it.
But the Knicks weren't the only game in the Garden, and occasionally they'd be sent in exile across town to 26th and Lexington.
And I used to get a kick in my days as a ball boy with the Knicks, in working games at the 69th Regiment Armory, which was a kind of a dilapidated building in Lower Manhattan, where the Knicks would play 7, 8, 9 games per year, even play some playoff games, because the circus would kick the Knicks out of the old Madison Square Garden. And the Armory had a beautiful floor, though, I must say, despite the condition of the building, and the locker rooms were terrible. And what's most memorable to me about the locker room, particularly the visiting locker room at the 69th Regiment Armory, they never seemed to have enough soap for the players. I remember guys sharing 3 pieces of soap in the shower. It was almost an intimidation tactic. You know, visiting teams used to feel the Knicks did it on purpose just to bother them. And it was a type of locker room setup where, I recall as a ball boy, the men's room was located right next to the visiting locker room at the 69th Regiment Armory. And even though there was a cop stationed in the front, fans would, by mistake, just walk into the visiting locker room to use the bathroom facility. It was wild. You know? Go to the bathroom with your favorite players. Could be, run a night.
Leonard Lewin.
It was mainly to give the Knicks a playing site. It's still there. It's on 25th and 26th and Lexington Avenue. And when the Knicks first came into existence in 1946, the college basketball was at its height. And there were no dates in the Garden for the Knicks. They had a few, but in order to fill out a schedule, they had someplace to play. So that's what they found. So they used to play their games down there. And, of course, you know what armories are. They're big halls. And they used to seat about 5,000 or something like that. But it was a different kind of atmosphere, obviously. You had the cases of guns downstairs. You had dressing rooms that only the military enforced existence in the military would keep you from complaining about.
Steve Albert says, for anyone who was there, there'll never be any place like the old Madison Square Garden.
The greatest basketball environment of all time. It will never be duplicated. That's pretty high praise. I mean, even you don't even get the same feeling in a shrine like the Boston Garden. I mean, it was the greatest feeling in the world when you walked in. The smell, just the ambiance, and it just stays with you.
By 1964, Knicks management had a plan. We'll talk about the steps to make it reality next.
So the scene is set. You have some background. But how did the New York Knicks, a franchise that struggled mightily for much of its NBA existence, start to build a team in the mid-1960s that would eventually win the hearts of millions of basketball fans in New York and beyond? The answer on our next episode, Episode 2, of the 1987 WNBC radio documentary, The New York Knicks, Those Championship Seasons. Thanks for listening. I'm Bud Mishkin.